From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 106 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are going to talk about the trope outlaw couple, because Sarah's not ready for the next one. Throwing it under the buzzer right away. We are going to talk about that and our top five outlaw couples. Or, if you do the math, our top 10 favorite outlaws. But first, as always, I am your host, Nick, and today I'm joined by...
Sir.
And Kyle.
Sir. We didn't get into it in the intro to last week's episode, but we've lost a few people since we recorded this last.
Yeah, we've lost quite a few. Abe Vigoda passed away most recently.
Yeah, it's a shame. Abe from Tessio.
Yeah, he was always smarter.
Yeah, Tessio was always smarter.
And smart move. Ziggy Stardust.
That one hurt the most for me.
Yeah.
I saw Bowie... when I was in high school, and it was really one of the best live concerts I've ever seen. Ziggy Stardust is top five favorite albums of all time for me. And, yeah, it sucks. He was... There could be only one Bowie. There will never be anyone like him again.
There's an interview of David Bowie, and he's talking... It's the early days of MTV. And he's talking to, like, the, you know... There's some young guy who's, like... the interviewer at MTV. However, it was back when, like, even the guy interviewing you on MTV was running shit. Because there was only, like, 10 people there. And he completely calls him out on... You know, the guy asked him, like, a run-of-the-mill question. He's like, well, I have a question for you. You know, considering that there's so many black Americans in America making music, and in the American music industry, why aren't there more black people on MTV? And just totally puts him on the spot. And I was like a pit bull, like, would not let it go.
That's awesome.
Just stays on him and is pulling out like answers from this guy, and it was just really cool. And he was always willing to do stuff like that. He really didn't care about the establishment.
Oh, he
at
didn't
all.
Give a fuck. I mean,
like, not even in the least.
You've seen the way he's dressed in the past.
Yeah, and I also there was an interview on NPR that they featured like the day after he died. That was pretty cool. He said that back then, it was either. If you're creative in Britain, it was either get into art, like painting, or music. And he just got into music just to, because it was a better way to make a living.
Yeah.
And he said he pretty much always felt like a visual artist the whole time and didn't really like performing as much as people thought. He was like a studio album type guy and really just liked putting it all together was like his main thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool. And like, it really gave me a different perspective. Just him dying kind of gave me a different perspective on him because I really looked into who he was, like a little bit more about who he was.
Yeah, and he just came out with a new album and the single.
Yeah, like a few days earlier or something.
Yeah, the single from that is very prescient. Like, it's clearly written from the perspective of, I'd heard it, and then maybe a week later he died, and I listened to it again, and I was like, oh, he's telling us that he's dying.
Yeah.
Which, so wait, this was recently recorded too? Wasn't
just
like
it's brand.
Something
I mean, it's
brought up from.
Yeah.
Wow. Alan Rickman also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Before we get into Alan Rickman, just David Bowie also, not just a great musician, but he was in some iconic
movies roles.
Iconic movie roles. Yeah. Tesla from The Prestige.
I really wanted to see The Labyrinth.
Yeah, I mean, The Labyrinth is. It's something that we kind of like missed out on as kids for whatever reason. Yeah. Like that and Dark Crystal are two things that we just were big blind spots to us as children.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Labyrinth, I saw it. I didn't see the Dark Crystal until I was already a teenager. Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the Labyrinth was like a role that was kind of like made for him. Like, I don't think anyone else could have really played that role. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And yeah, it's crazy how he can play a role like Labyrinth where he's just really over the top and then something like,
he's very subdued in The Prestige.
Yeah, The Prestige. Like, you almost like don't know it's him in a way. It's just like it's really awesome.
Yeah, and then he also just this is how in line David Bowie and I are / were is there's a song from an album of his from the early 90s called Jump, They Say. And the music video to Jump, They Say is basically a recreation, reenactment, I guess, of La Jetée.
Jeez.
It all comes back. It always comes back.
We need to retire that movie, actually. Add that to your list.
This was not on my... That was not on my list, so I don't want to hear it. David Bowie also in Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. So
nice.
But you were saying another man we lost.
Yeah, Alan Rickman.
I think that one actually hit me the hardest.
Yeah, that one, I know it hit Lisa the hardest just because, recently Snape, he was...
it was a big deal for a lot of people with Snape. For me, it was...
Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber was kind of a game changer in terms of
Robin Hood
villains.
Yeah. And also that one guy from Love Actually. which is funny. It's funny, like, yeah, the headlines will be like Snape and that one guy from Love Actually or something. And it's like, he was also Hans Gruber, one of the greatest movie villains of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't find this out until he died. That was his first film role.
Was it really?
Yes, that was his very first film role.
He had to have done stage before.
I think stage, maybe a couple TV shows, whatever. And yeah, that was his first film ever. And to come out in your first movie and hit a home run as one of the greatest villains of all time is like, wow, that's Alan awesome. Rickman.
Mm-hmm.
What a G.
Yeah. And then also in the 90s, back-to-back movies of Dogma and Galaxy Quest, which I just rewatched.
He's really good in that.
He's great in Galaxy Quest.
And you know, he's like totally different from the normal Alan, than what Alan Rickman, I guess, was at the time. Because by then, it had kind of set in that Alan Rickman was this villain. And, you know, he plays this Galaxy Quest character. He has the same amount of like...
Wait, what's that line that everyone keeps asking him to say?
Grab Thar's hammer. I will avenge you.
Oh
wow.
I love how the first time you see him, he's just like, I won't go out there and I won't say that line one more time.
He's losing his mind on it. just really, really a great guy. And too young.
Yeah.
Like 67?
69. Because I know that it was
him and Bowie were the same age.
And then they're saying that someone else... like, it always happens in threes, but I forget.
I forgot who the other guy was.
Abe Vigoda, I guess.
Yeah, there was like...
There was like a musician.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody from the Eagles, I think.
Yeah. I just remember wishing it was Eric Clapton.
Yeah, my opinion of the Eagles is similar to that of the dudes.
Oh, you don't like the Eagles?
No.
In the city, though. Me and Dave DiNarfio were just talking about that.
No, I stand by Jeffrey Lebowski with this one. I hate the fucking Eagles.
It's understandable.
Yeah. Speaking of the Big Lebowski, Paul in the UK is getting hitched.
What? No way.
He didn't say anything about it. I was just talking to him.
Maybe things turned sour.
Wow.
In the week in between we talked to him.
I hope everything's still okay, man.
Are we invited? That would be awesome.
Yeah, let us know, Paul in the UK.
Pay for our tickets.
Also pay for our tickets.
Because that's a long train ride over.
They'd be like, how do you know Paul? We're on a podcast that he likes to listen to.
Yep. Front row seats.
Hopefully it's fish and chips. That's like one of my favorite meals.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Man, if you guys go to O'Charlie's, Cuyahoga Falls.
That sounds awesome.
Get the fish and chips.
What do you think about lemon with your fish and chips?
I got to do it.
That's good.
I got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Malt vinegar as well on the fries.
I think over the last like maybe month on this show, we've really ramped up the food talk. Yeah. But I'm going to say the one problem with lemon is that the
seeds,
you got to be careful with the seeds.
Yeah. Because when they get in there,
that's why you got to do it upside down.
It's like your hand's covered in blood. It's like,
it's like you're squeezing a heart. It's like you're the guy like from a bad Temple
Shakespearean
of Doom.
Scene, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
that was cooking tips with On the Tropes.
Yeah.
On this week's episode, we are going to talk about how to
fillet a fillet.
I did have to teach Lisa how to properly dice an onion.
Oh, yeah. I was like, your wife's name is Nellie.
No, I didn't teach
her. Yeah, I know. And she's been raving about it ever since. It's a life changer.
What are you talking about? The roof of the mouth technique?
No. You slide
on the roof of the mouth?
To dice an onion, you longitude it. You cut it down longitudinally. And then you make... perpendicular cuts, but not chopping the top off, and then you do cuts perpendicular to that, but since the top is not, this is just horrible radio.
Basically, keep the root end together. So when you're cutting the onion,
it holds it together.
That's not some Julia Child's bullshit. The root end of the onion.
Stem. I don't know. The pointy part of the onion. Is that better?
I'm just trying to spice it up somehow.
Yeah,
and listeners, keep your tongue on the roof of your mouth, and it'll make it a little bit easier.
To cut an onion?
Yeah. That's where most of the onion acidicness
with the
gets
crying
in. Yeah.
With the crying, yep. I mean,
yeah, it helps. What? You'll feel it too. Like it'll collect on your tongue.
I've found that having glasses on while you cut an onion hurts more. I think somehow the juices get trapped up in there.
And they kind of just like it's like
a game of Breakout inside your glasses.
Yeah.
It's like
that's rough. Anyways, on this week's episode, we were talking about outlaw couples. What is that?
Essentially, it is a couple that either they're like a regular couple that goes on a killing spree, or they're already on the run, or like they're career criminals. It can be some different things. However, generally, both criminals in some way and a couple.
So what makes that more interesting than a lone outlaw? Kyle, what do you think?
I think having it be a couple really changes it up, because I guess it depends on how they're sort of shown in the either movie or TV show. I think traditional outlaw couples, it's always the guy who's the main bad guy, and then you don't find out till halfway through that, like, oh, the wife was also doing something equally as bad. Mm-hmm. And like, although, I had that twist.
I've got some.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of examples where they're always working together, and the fact that they're two different people can change up how they tackle a certain, I don't know, dastardly deed that they're doing, or
Yeah, a lot of times there are power dynamics
and there's always like one of them gets caught and the other one gets away and has a chance to like get the other one out and stuff like that.
Or one wants to get out and the other one
is
still wants to be in the life of crime or something like that. And I think what's most interesting is by outlaw couple, it's typically
they're not happy together. I don't know if that's the direction you're going, but yeah.
But it's typically a romantic relationship. That's the type of couple we're talking about, right? Not Butch and Sundance.
Yeah, like
the
TV tropes page or some of the lists I've looked up are including like the Melendez brothers. Yeah. I don't think it's like two.
I think that's a sub. Yes.
Yeah, we're talking about
two people who are outlaws together is not the same as outlaw couple. Mm-hmm. We mean an outlaw couple.
And then TV tropes defines it as that also, as two lovers who team up to commit crime.
Yeah.
So there's always that sort of drama between them.
Yeah. And the other thing is, in most of these stories, somehow the outlawing that they do ends up becoming a metaphor for sex. You know?
And Bonnie and Clyde, it definitely does. Yeah.
That's the specific example I think I was thinking of. In that one, it's not very subtle. Other ones sometimes had to be a little bit more subtle, but that one, she like strokes his gun.
Yeah.
Go.
They weren't even trying.
And then he's just overtly impotent in that movie also.
Yeah.
Really,
I guess
he
had some troubles in prison.
Yeah.
Is what, in real life.
But yeah, having it be a couple, each one kind of adds their own sort of, I don't know, their own talent to the relationship. So like with the Breaking Bad and Walter White and his wife, he's like sort of the brings in all the money, and she's the one who's kind of like hiding it for a few seasons, I guess.
Yeah. But, she's bringing her own talents.
Yeah. Using her talents to sort of launder money. And, it's kind of interesting to see how two different types of people can work together to do some bad stuff.
Yeah, and that relationship is one where it's much, it explores the shifting perspectives in terms of well, how committed she is, how committed she's willing to be, and how that affects him, which is much different than either if it was just him or if it was him with somebody who he wasn't married to.
Yeah, and then that's an interesting thing with that couple in particular is you see her role literally change throughout the show. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not always an outlaw, and I think I have a couple on my list where either there's a change and one of them wasn't always an outlaw either. So I like seeing that too, even though it's kind of messed up.
Yeah, in some ways. Her arc in that show is actually really similar to Walter's, although it's much slower and not nearly to the same extent.
Not as extreme, yeah.
Yeah, but the overall kind of shift is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I think the strength of this is it's a fantasy. It's kind of like, and it really, I guess, like, exaggerates that whole whirlwind romance thing. Mm-hmm. It's just the idea that you meet this person and they change your life. And I think all of these movies kind of have that same manic, dangerous, infatuous relationship, you know, the idea of it. And I think it's just a furtherance of that fantasy of this, like, crazy love, you know.
I agree. If you guys had to be an outlaw couple with a real life outlaw, who would it be?
I can't think of her name or real name right now. However, it'd be she's featured in the documentary Cocaine Cowboys. There's like this cartel, cartel queen from the 80s, Queen of Miami.
I was going to go with Squeaky Fromm. She was a member of the Manson family and it went to jail for attempted assassination.
Oh,
of all people, she tried to assassinate Jerry Ford.
I was just going to go simple and say Winona Ryder. I don't know. Just I couldn't think of any outlaws that I'd want to be with.
And the woman I'm talking about, Griselda Blanco.
All right.
Yeah.
So
she has actually passed.
Oh.
However, so I'd have to go back in time. However, she had like billions of dollars. She's known as the lady of the mafia. La dama de la mafia. Yeah.
Nice.
That's my shitty Spanish.
No, I like that. On these new episodes, here are the changes we're going to make. It's a new year. We're going to talk a little bit more about cooking. We're going to do a little Spanish and then keep checking out that Letterboxd site.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. You guys want to take a quick break and then jump into our top fives?
Sure.
All right. Join us after the break, and we're going to talk about our top 10 favorite outlaws / top 5 outlaw couples.
Listeners, if you listen to us on iTunes, leave a rating.
No, we really appreciate that kind of stuff.
And a review. You leave that review, we're reading it.
We will, unless it's mean. Actually, we'll read it if it's good or if it's really mean.
Yeah, exactly. Hot, cold.
Yeah, if you leave it like a tepid 4, we're not going to read it. If you leave an odd scathing 1, oh, we'll probably get
it. If you read it, if you leave a rating or a review in rhyme, we will for sure read it.
Sir will actually rap it.
Mm-hmm. Over a beat.
This is true. 100% true, listeners. If you leave a review in rhyme, I will rap it over a beat and release that same rap to YouTube.
I thought this tape was going to be a conversation stimulator, man. I was gonna ask you for your top 5 records to play on a Monday morning and all that, and you just had to f***ing ruin it. Hope we'll do it next Monday.
No! I'm gonna do it now!
Welcome back to the show. We are talking about our top 5 favorite outlaw couples. Kyle, what is your number 5 couple?
I think my number 5 couple, and I'm sure Sir will be able to elaborate on this couple a little more than I will be able to, but the Joker and Harley Quinn, I think they're... I hope I didn't step on your list at all.
Mm.
Good. I just think that they've always been like this classic villain couple where he's kind of the mastermind and she is, I guess recently in a lot of games that I've been playing, she's equally as bad, but she is sort of that innocent kind of, I don't know, more, I mean, they're both just so crazy together and they're like a really perfect couple, but their talents together really create this power team that you don't want to mess with. I think they're an interesting couple. I don't know if you have anything else. If you know more about their history, or I know there's probably a lot of iterations of them. And
I'm not like a huge DC guy. However, the really cool thing about at least Harley Quinn is that she's like a really highly educated psychologist in the comics. She's like really smart.
Yeah, but I guess I remember that from the animated show.
I think
show. She's
like, I think in a lot of the versions of her, she's like Joker's psychologist or something.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And I think...
you go crazy from doing that.
And in some universes, she's like, the way they meet is she's also just really obsessed with him. Mm-hmm. Like she, I don't know if she's just likes how wild he is or what, but yeah, it's... when you're that obsessed with somebody and you'll do pretty much anything for them, that creates like a really creepy sort of team and dynamic. So yeah, that'd be my number five couple. What about you, sir?
My number five couple is, for when I have to have an honorable mention, goes to Badlands.
Are we leaving Badlands off? Because I can leave Badlands off, but we also got to leave Bonnie and Clyde off then.
All right, well, how about, do you want to just start over then, and then you talk about Badlands, then I won't say
anything. No, it's fine.
Because like, I don't really want to talk about it. I just felt like I had to mention it.
No, it was going to be my number one. Because
Jeez. Are you serious?
But I've talked about it on the show.
I don't really
want
to. No, I want to leave it off. So.
No.
Let's edit that, because I don't want to.
Nope, well, I'm not editing it. All right. Come on.
All right, well, the only thing I was going to say about Badlands is, for one, it's pretty good. And
It's damn good.
It's one of the best movies ever. Martin Sheen uses a shield, like a makeshift shield against gunfire, which, Jesus Christ. However, I did hear this Charlie Starkweather interview recently, and Badlands is about this couple that goes on a killing spree, and Charlie Starkweather was like one of the original American spree killers. And I listened to an interview of him, one serviced online. It's like the only real like recording of his voice, and it is very, very clear that he was not, he did not have all his faculties. Like, he would not have been considered fit to stand trial today.
He had some mental deterioration.
I mean, it's just really crazy. Like, he would not have been considered eligible to to stand trial today at all. From just listening to him, I don't think so. So that's kind of an interesting wrinkle in the whole story. And he's gotten, and in every portrayal of him, there's never any mental handicap, anything. So I just think that's kind of interesting how history has been rewritten mostly by Terrence Winter.
Terrence Malick.
Terrence Malick. Who am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Terrence Malick.
My actual pick, though, and I'm not going to say too much about it, is just one of my favorite outlaw couples, Robin and Marion. I think that those two are kind of the icons. And the Robin and Marion movie with Sean Connery features one of the best sword fights of all time. So check it out. Nick.
And she helped with the robbing, or
she just I don't think Marion ever actually.
She just let it happen.
She's I know she. There were times in some versions where she's been along with it. Like it kind of depends on what version you're watching. I think some of the newer ones, they make her more badass just because of modern times. Yeah. And I had to mention it because, geez, Alan Rickman, we miss you. Man.
Yeah.
I think
too soon.
I totally understand his obsession with Marion. Mostly because it's Alan Rickman and I just try to understand anything about him. Try to see it from his point of view.
To follow up, Terrence Winter is the guy who wrote Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, I'm like...
he worked on Boardwalk and Sopranos.
That's how I know the name from.
Yeah.
All right. Nick, what's your number five?
My number five, bumped from my list, are Badlands, which we've talked about, and Bonnie and Clyde, which we also talked about. I think those two are like pretty obvious examples that I didn't even want to put them. We've talked about both of them on the show before anyway, but I would have felt bad leaving them off, so retired. In place of those, my number five, instead of Bonnie and Clyde, is going to be Bunny and Clyde. If you guys remember them from Looney Tunes.
No.
Bunny and Clyde, it was basically Bonnie and Clyde only in cartoon rabbit form. They were only in a couple shorts, but they were called We Rob Carrot Patches and the Great Carrot Train Robbery. That's I don't have much more to say about it. But they were after the movie. So that just kind of shows how much influence Bonnie and Clyde actually had. It trickled down all the way to Looney Tunes. Kyle, what's your number four?
My number four is kind of an interesting number four, because this power couple, or outlaw couple isn't nearly as strong as the Joker and Harley. But I just didn't feel like I had much to say about Joker and Harley. My number four is Jesse and James from Pokemon, the first season. I don't know if either. I know you don't watch it, Nick, but
nope.
You probably don't watch it either. So.
What's
Pokemon? Jesse and James, Team Rocket.
Yeah, no Team Rocket.
It's questionable whether they are actually a couple, but they are definitely always like together.
Yeah. Aren't they related?
I don't. Think
are they brother and sister?
Well, one of them has purple hair. One of them has blue hair. So I don't know if they're. I don't know. Like in the Pokemon universe, is that like? I'm assuming that's.
I'm assuming too. I never knew that. I really don't know.
I actually looked it up on some forums, and there's a lot of people who think like that they are together. But
we're going with no then, because I guess it really is never said that they're.
Yeah, siblings. but they're basically just the face of Team Rocket in that first season, or at least a couple seasons, and Team Rocket is just a bad organization that's trying to use Pokemon for bad things and trying to exploit them, but they're just always together, and I think there's maybe an episode or a couple where they're not together and they're just like they can't function without each other, and I think that's like kind of the sort of definition of a good outlaw couple. So yeah, it's kind of a goofy one, but Jesse and James from Pokemon.
Nice.
What about you, sir?
My number four is Tommy Uva and Rosie Uva from the 2014 movie Rob the Mob. It's not a perfect film. It was somewhat enjoyable. I think the story behind it, though, is really cool. Basically, it happened in real life during the, I guess it had been like the 80s. There were these two small-time crooks that started robbing the mafia in New York, and the guy would just go into these like mob social clubs with an Uzi and would just rob them, and didn't really care that he's robbing the mafia. And it ends pretty predictably.
Pretty well.
Yeah, totally well. They get away and they move overseas.
Yeah,
so nice. Michael Pitt, which some people think he's a good actor. I think it's okay. Ray Romano, Andy Garcia. So, like, a lot of actors I really don't like.
Aww.
Yeah. It's funny because, like,
Rob's mom.
None of these actors I like.
Deborah. What's Rob's mom?
Like, not a one. Nina Arianda stars as Rosie Uva. I'm not a huge fan of her. I never really heard of her before this film. However, somehow the movie actually is watchable, and I could get to the end. So,
yeah.
And the story is just crazy. It's just completely nuts. So, yeah, they're pretty cool. It's an outlaw couple.
Your Ray Romano almost sounds like a bobcat.
Yeah,
cool. All of my impressions are pretty similar.
Bobcat. Nick, what's your number four?
What would Bobcat Goldthwait and Ray Romano's kid sound like?
Oh, my God.
I don't know. And Chewbacca.
My number four is the movie Fallen Angels, which is a movie by Wong Kar-wai, and
beautiful movie.
Yeah, it's
makes you want a motorcycle real bad.
Yeah, like all of his movies, it's great looking and kind of bananas. The first half of this movie is kind of divided up into two halves. The first half and the first story is about this couple who don't even really know each other. It's a hitman who, when he leaves his house, there's a woman who is part housekeeper, part kind of go-between, who sends him the messages for who he should do the hit on. And they're not exactly a couple per se, since they don't actually directly interact with each other. But I like the dynamic between the two of them, and particularly her infatuation with him. I think it's just a really interesting story. And I've liked the first half of the movie and their story much better than the second half. But Fallen Angels, pretty cool. Pretty cool movie. Definitely a weird one. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three's from one of my favorite gaming trilogies of all time, until the fourth one comes out later this year. The game is Uncharted, and the couple is Nathan Drake and Elena Fisher. Nathan Drake is kind of like this Indiana Jonesy type character, where he's in the game, he's technically like a thief. He'll steal these artifacts from museums, and a lot of the game is him going into temples and stuff, but he's, I mean, technically a thief, and this is one of those situations where his partner isn't always on his side. And when they first meet, she's just this reporter who's, I think she's like covering him or wanting to get a story from him, but then they fall in love and she sort of goes along with what he, some of the bad things that he does. Yeah, it's just really well done story. And I, since the games take place over three of them, you definitely see this sort of the change between her being with him and against him, and he'll pair up with other people and bump into her, and then they'll always end up back together. And yeah, it's just kind of an interesting relationship between them. So
I saw a trailer for that in the movie theater.
Uncharted 4?
Yeah, it was like before a movie.
It's going to be super good, because it's, I mean, that same team, they made Uncharted 3, and then they made The Last of Us, and now they're making Uncharted 4, and the Uncharted 4 is going to be ridiculous. Sorry, what would be your number 3?
My number 3 is Zod and Ursa from Superman, I believe Superman 2, and Ursa is based on this character called Feyora, who is that's what she's called in the new like version of them in the Man of Steel. And I just think they're a great outlaw couple, because they're so arrogant. Just, man, they really hate Superman. And I don't know. I don't really have too much to say about them other than just the fact that, man, they are some snobs, and they really come close to, in every version they show up in, like really taking Superman down a peg. Mm-hmm. So I can relate to that.
Yeah, take him down.
Yeah, take that, Supes. Nick, what's your number 3?
My number 3, it's been a while since I've done a tie.
It's been a while.
Since
I... But I'm doing a tie. My tie this week is two Tarantino works, some of his earlier things. It is True Romance, which is a Tony Scott-directed film, but Tarantino script. Clarence and Alabama are very heavily based off of... the characters from Badlands. And then the other pairing is Pumpkin and Honey Bunny from the beginning of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And I just love the dynamics between both of those pairings. Pumpkin and Honey Bunny obviously is a little bit less fleshed out, I think, than Clarence and Alabama.
Which is funny that they even have names. Do they say them?
I think they're just named.
I think they call each other the Pumpkin names at some point in it, and yeah. Except it's not really obvious until you. It's not obvious that that's their names. And you think it's just like when I'm watching it. Mm. When I did watch it, I just thought like,
yeah,
just like pet names.
I think they're just named Pumpkin and Honey Bunny.
Yeah, that's what
I like to think.
I'll go with that.
Anywho,
nice.
Yeah, I just like the way Tarantino writes these couples, and I think the Pumpkin and Honey Bunny scene in Pulp Fiction is one of the most memorable parts of a very memorable film.
Yeah, I think what it makes up for not being like well developed, it adds.
It's not that it's poorly developed. It's just that they're only on screen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes up for it by them being just so over the top, yeah, and just ridiculous. And you can tell that they love each other.
Yeah.
And like, that's all that really matters, really.
They just love doing crime, too.
Yeah.
Love that crime. Kyle, what is your number 2?
My number 2 is Paul and Katie from The Fall. Have you seen The Fall on Netflix? Anybody? This is another one where they're not technically a couple, but they work together and there's strong sexual tension between them. Like, it's actually kind of like a live action version of the Joker and Harley Quinn, where she's like really into him and admires him, and she'll do anything for him, and he is the mastermind behind it all, and he's just such a crazy character, and she is equally as crazy for going along with everything that he's interested in, and she's 16 and he's mid-30s. So it's like there's a weird like
creepiness,
like weird relationship thing going on between them. So yeah, it's I just finished the two seasons that are on Netflix right now. I think they're coming out the third one soonish, and it's pretty good, pretty creepy, pretty awesome.
I learned something interesting about, because I watched a movie called Shadow Dancer last night that Gillian Anderson's in, and she plays a British person.
You learn how to play her, you learn how to pronounce her first name.
Isn't it Gillian?
I know. I'm just saying, is that how what you learned?
No. What I learned was apparently she, her accent is, she
it's
grew
more
up.
Natural?
No, she grew up kind of in London / Michigan, like. Her family moved back and forth, so she has both a Midwestern and a British accent, just kind of depending on where she is. Like she does both, and they're both her. She's like ambidextrous of accents.
Yeah, like ever since that show ended, me and Lisa just every once in a while we'll like switch on our sort of Irish accents and talk about like BC McNally and Paul Spector and everything that's going on the show. But yeah, it's a good show. I'd recommend it.
I love the Irish accent. It's, you know who?
And everyone calls Gillian Anderson mom. And mom. It's awesome.
Mom. You know who can't do an Irish accent? She can do a lot
does
of
it,
accents.
Does it sound Jamaican?
No, it sounds Indian. She can do a lot of accents, but Irish, despite that being the only country that we've actually traveled to, is one that she just cannot do.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Sir, what would be your number two?
My number two is from Legend of Korra, and it is Zaheer and Pillai. Basically, Zaheer is one of the main villain of his season, and they're essentially terrorists, like fighting against the world order that's in Korra's planet. And it's really cool because Zaheer is considered like the most dangerous man alive, and the first few establishing episodes he's just breaking out his old gang. And finally they get to this woman that he's breaking out, and it's not only is it like, you know, the last one is like the most important because he's in love with her, however she's also the most dangerous. And I just think that their characterization was one of the best characterizations of any relationship that villains had, because they really cared about each other genuinely. Like the love really was like, it's not, I don't know, with like Zad and a lot of these couples you feel like they're evil, so it's kind of lessened. Like, they don't really care about each other. Like, maybe the crime's more important, or maybe something else is. However, in this, there was, like, it was really strong. And mm-hmm. it really enhanced the whole thing, kind of humanizing them that way. And it's pretty interesting, because she's actually taller than him. And then there's one scene where they kiss, and he has to, like, stand on his toes. It's just, so, I don't know, it's just pretty cool. Different.
That's what Tom Cruise has to do.
Yeah, every time. And he is not a tall man.
And Bogey had to do it too.
Yeah, Bogey. Yeah, is another guy who's pretty short. Definitely not a looker by the standards of today.
Bogey.
Yeah, wouldn't have made it, which is pretty awesome. Like, it's just pretty. I don't know. I miss those kinds of actors. Like, I saw a Lee Marvin interview.
Yeah,
yeah, that guy had a rocky face.
Or oh fuck, what's the guy's name? Oh, that joke landed.
Nick, what's your number two?
Edward G. Robinson. God damn it.
Yeah. You know who really likes him? Eva Destruction.
It's because he's the man.
Yeah. She thinks he's like really, yeah, the man. And he is. Totally is.
Yeah. My number two is a movie from 1950 called Gun Crazy. And this is.
I was hoping you would mention this because I tried to watch it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find a copy in time.
Oh, I have a copy of it. Nice. Yeah, it's an interesting movie. There's a lot of it that actually is pretty dated.
Huh, I was going to say, sir tried to watch it, but then it was boring. So yeah. He didn't watch it.
I tried to watch it, and I only got halfway through it. Yeah. No, a lot of it is dated. It is from 1950. So you have to keep in mind that it is from a different era, but it's basically about this guy who is obsessed with guns and shooting things. And he's like a very talented shot, and he falls in love with a woman from the circus whose job at the circus is to be a good shot. And to make money, they go on a crime spree, and he is pretty conflicted about it. And kind of like to flip what Kyle was saying earlier, she is less conflicted about it. And things kind of go a little bit off the rails. this is a movie that was pretty much, even though it didn't come out until over a decade later, we wouldn't have had Bonnie and Clyde without this movie, and without Bonnie and Clyde, we wouldn't have had Badlands. So it's an essential part of
the
cinema landscape. And it does have one of the great oners in movie history, where they're driving in a car, they circle around the block a few times, and still in one take, they park the car, he goes in to rob a bank, and she parks right in front of a cop who's patrolling, like standing on the street right outside the bank. So there's just the tension of the oneer that we're used to seeing.
And it's not following the action, it's following her.
It's following her while all the robbing is going on in the building on the other side of the wall that we see. So it just does a great way of building the tension the way that a oneer does, just letting the camera sit there for what seems like way too long. So it's a great scene. So Kyle, what is your number one outlaw couple?
My number one's an interesting one, because the outlaw couple could really be named anything, because my number one happens in a game called The Sims. And in a game where you can choose your occupation, one of the occupations you can choose for your sim is criminal. And I was talking to Lisa about it, and she said that she's never actually chosen that as an occupation, and because apparently she plays like the vanilla version of Sims, where everyone's like a painter or a rock star. But
she doesn't play Sims Theft Auto.
But theoretically, you could create a couple or a whole entire family that are all criminals, and I think that that's really cool. Or you can even do like, there's some conflict where the husband and wife, or the mom and dad, are criminals and the kids are like police officers or something, and like not technically there's drama, because I don't think they would even know, but it's just kind of a unique sort of create your own outlaw couple in a game that's still around. I think they just released Sims 5 or something ridiculous. So yeah, Sims, what about you, sir?
My number one is Donald Trump and Sarah Palin.
No, it's not.
I wish it was, though. I really wish it was. My number one's actually a tie, and it was really, really hard. It was really hard to choose. As some of you know, one of my absolute favorite movies is The Getaway, directed by Walter Hill, and I think that...
I didn't even consider that. I am a fool.
I think that the team of Steve McQueen and Ally McGraw as Doc McCoy and Carol McCoy is iconic as an outlaw couple. The movie is kind of dated in some ways.
In a few ways.
It's not the most gender PC film at all in any way, shape, or form.
It's the same Peckinpah movie, might say.
Yeah, exactly. So if you see it, just be prepared for that. However, I can't stop loving this movie. I think it's perfectly shot. I think it's one of the greatest action movies. It's easily one of the top five American action movies ever. However, I think that my other film, Perdita Durango, directed by Alex de la Iglesia, starring Rosie Perez and Javier Bardem as Perdita Durango and Romeo De La Rosa, it's just... Imagine, like, you take this trope and you just dial it up to 11, and that's what Perdita Durango is. It's one of the greatest outlaw road couple movies ever. Basically, Rosie Perez is this kind of small-time drug trafficking, all kinds of crook type lady, and then Javier Bardem is this weird, like, voodoo cult leader, bank robber, cocaine dealer. He just does like a lot in the movie, and he's pretty awesome. And there's like human sacrifice. James Gandolfini is in it. It's kind of a mix of like horror, crime, all kinds of stuff. I really can't talk enough about it. You can find it as either Dance with the Devil, according to the internet, or Perdita Durango. And if you're a fan of any of those people, Alex de Iglesia, Javier Bardem, Rosa Perez, James Gandolfini, Screaming Jay Hawkins is in it, for God's sake.
Really?
Yeah, and he's awesome in it. He kills in this movie, like you imagine he did in real life. So I just can't talk enough about it. I love it so much. It's one of my top 10, I think, top 20 films at least. I don't know if it's my top 10.
Wow. Yeah. Strong praise.
Yeah, definitely. It's huge. It's a great film. Nick, what's your number one?
My number one is, I've noticed we've gone a little hetero on our list.
Yeah. I actually kicked off one. I had one non-hetero couple in it, and they didn't make it.
Was it this couple, Omar and Brandon from The
Wire? No, it was actually, it was from Bound.
Oh, that's a good one too.
I would have another tie.
I'm going with Omar, and I just love the way that they address the sexuality of his character in the show, because he is just the most badass person. He's you know how everyone loves Tyrion Lannister and he's everyone's favorite character on Game of Thrones? Omar is that for The Wire.
Oh, for sure.
Indeed.
It doesn't count as...
Does he say that? I don't watch The Wire.
Yeah.
Nice!
Yeah. Omar does say, oh, indeed, and it is actually a reference to about to have sex with Brandon, I believe. Who is his first... boyfriend. He has others subsequently in the series, but Omar is just kind of a Robin Hood-esque character in a way, in that he robs people who deserve to be robbed. That being said, he doesn't give to the rich, he just keeps it, and that's what he does.
It. And you know, the moralizing behind Omar doesn't make complete sense. I guess let's put it this way, the character, his personal code is the only thing that makes it. He sells drugs too. If you remember the one time when he's in his lair and he's like randomly holding a baby, he sells drugs in that scene, or he has drugs he gives to someone that regularly gets drugs from him. And it's like, he's very similar to the other characters in that. However, he does have, I think what's so cool about Omar is he's in this insane situation like all of them, and he still manages to have a code.
Yeah.
And it's essentially a critique of the situation, just that even in this crazy environment, this guy who you would never expect this to be the most moral guy, it flies a, you know, him being a homosexual man and being the most moral person on the show flies against a lot of American TV convention.
Yeah. So I mean, he's just one of the best characters of any TV show. And the best character from what I consider to be the best TV show. So Omar had to make my list. You can't leave Omar off.
You know, one of the main reasons you put him on your list is one of the reasons I kept Bound off my list, because I hadn't seen it in a while, and I wasn't sure if I remembered the relationship. I don't know if it was genuine or if it was more kind of a male fantasy kind of relationship than anything else. Yeah. However, I gotta watch it again. I don't want to just throw too much shade on it without having seen it again. I haven't seen it in like 10 years.
All right, cool. So those were our top five Ella couples. If you have your own top
Ella Paul's
couple. Oh, we do. Right. You do have your own outlaw couple list.
Yeah, and I actually get to read them this time. Usually all right. It's Nick.
Nice.
Usually it's me.
Yeah, this is from our longtime friend and listener, Paul in the UK.
So before you give that, what I'm doing is keeping lists of all the movie related things, because that's all that Letterboxd allows one to do. So the TV video games things won't make it onto Letterboxd, but of the movies, I'm actually keeping score of what makes it on our list
The end of the year awards.
No, so the people can have a place to reference if they want to go back. So if you check out letterboxd.com/onthetropes, you can find these lists. Do we want to include Paul's on here too? Or any listeners who post it?
I think
that's fair.
I think it's fair.
All right. So
it's kosher.
Hit me with it.
So Paul's list for Outlaw Couple is Bonnie and Clyde.
All right.
Joker and Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Mickey and Mallory Knox from Natural Born Killers.
Another Tarantino work.
And he just had one more. He only had four for this one, and that was Fred and Rosemary West, who I was not familiar with, so he sent me a Wikipedia link.
Oh, are these real people?
Oh, they're real people. Oh, God. And they are...
This is going to be dark.
Up. Oh, yeah. As our friends in Canada would say. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In the 90s, they killed 12... I wouldn't just say killed, tortured, you know, everything. Numerous young women and girls, murdering at least 12, including their own family members.
Oh, yeah.
So they were a pretty busy couple during the 90s. And
very disturbing. Thank you, yes. Paul.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
And so, congrats on your upcoming nuptials.
An English serial killing couple. So, and as Paul said,
is Mrs. Paul from the UK also a fan of our show?
I like to think that she would be if she ever listened to us. Much like all people. So if they wanted to listen to us, where would they go, you guys?
Much like all people. You go first.
You could go to facebook.com/onthetropes. You can see different links we put up. And, you know, we have some interactions with listeners there. And you can type directly onto the page.
Yeah, you could.
If you'd like to.
You could. You can also go to iTunes and type in On the Tropes and subscribe to us, and you can get a weekly or semi-weekly update of all of our episodes. And if you could rate us, that would be awesome.
That would be just goddamn delightful.
It would be pretty sweet.
You could also email us at onthetropes@gmail.com, and you can always head over to tvtropes.org and learn more about outlaw couples. And go to Letterboxd, LetterBoxd.com/onthetropes, where, I don't know, I'm keeping track of movies and shit, and outlaw couple list will be posted.
So you're making a database of every reference we make that it's movie related.
Yeah. So it's limited, but we're doing
so. So I'm not going to be on there very much. All my video game choices are not going to be on there.
Let's see. Did you have any that made it this week?
I don't think so. This week, probably Joker and Harley, if that is a movie.
It is not.
Nope. Zero. Awesome.
Thanks for the help, Kyle.
Awesome. We'll celebrate when I finally get on there.
All right. Maybe next week. In the meantime, next week, what are we talking about? Oh, my God.
My God. Only one name.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Oh, holy God. Okay.
Holy Mother of God. Only one name coming up next week. As always, I've been your host, Nick, and we have been...
Sir?
And Kyle.
And join us again next week when we'll be stuck
on the trip.